sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Pro-Life America Podcast. I'm Mark Crutcher, and as you heard, lurking nearby is one of the usual suspects, Sarah Waits.
Hello, everyone. So, Mark, last week was the March for Life, and during the March for Life, there were a few counter-protesters. There's also been some videos that have come out recently that people are talking about. Seeing the stuff that's come out made me think it would be a good idea to do another episode of responding to pro-choice arguments and comments.
You know, I've always said that God gifted us with really stupid enemies, and that's been a real blessing for us over the years. And their use of language is a really good testament to this. And you're just seeing the latter-day versions. I mean, I can remember 40 years ago all the stupidity that we heard. And I remember one time seeing a counter-protester at one of the pro-life marches, a guy, a male, holding a sign up that said, "Keep your rosaries off my ovaries." And I'm thinking, this guy's got ovaries? And they're also very good at these distortions of arguments, or distortion of language that has seeped its way into our culture, even to some degree to the pro-life side. And I'll give you a couple of examples of this. They'll say things like, the pro-lifers are trying to keep women from having pregnancy terminations. Well, we're not that stupid. All pregnancies terminate.
Yeah.
They're going to terminate with a
woman doesn't stay pregnant forever.
Well, unless she does stay pregnant forever, her pregnancy is going to terminate. And it's going to terminate either with a live baby or a dead baby. Now, our argument is that they should terminate with live babies.
Well, I will say it is easier to be pro-choice from a debate standpoint because all you have to do as a pro-choicer is to say, I believe that women have bodily autonomy and get to decide what they do with their body. And I don't believe anybody has the right to tell them what to do with their body. That's really basically it. You have that, a few slogans and a couple of lines, and that's it. You don't have to know anything.
Yeah, well, that was a statement that I used to make at the first of all my seminars. You know, I started out in the pro-life movement teaching people how to argue the pro-life position. And what you just said was my opening line. I said, look, this is an eight-hour seminar, and you're still going to leave here not knowing everything you need to know because it's complex to be pro-life. But to be pro-choice, I even made it simpler than what you said. I said, all you got to say is, I don't like abortion. I just don't think I have the right to tell somebody else they can't have one. That's 100% of what you need to know to defend the pro-abortion position.
Yeah.
But for the pro-life side, you've got to have some arguments that are steeped in the law, steeped in medicine, steeped in theology, philosophy, all kinds of different disciplines that you don't have to have if you're pro-abortion.
But the good news is once you force them out of those one or two simple lines and out of the slogans, and you actually start debating with them and talking with them about abortion and getting into it, you clearly reveal which side has the advantage. And we're going to go into some of those comments and stuff that people are making so you can see the difference between the pro-choice position and the pro-life position.
Right.
So at the March for Life, MRC News did some interviews with people. And the interviewer found this one pro-choice person who says, a fetus isn't a child until it's been fertilized.
I'd say this doofus needs a biology lesson or two. Fetuses don't get fertilized. Fetuses are the result
of fertilization.
Of fertilization, where an egg is fertilized by sperm. But fetuses don't get fertilized.
Yeah.
So you would think, okay, if that's your argument, that they're not human beings until they're fertilized, then if I can show you that fertilization's already occurred, then you should change your mind on the abortion issue, right?
Yeah.
But I have pushed these people into a corner on things like that before and said, okay, now I have shown that your argument is idiotic. Does that change your mind on abortion? No. They just go on to something else that's equally idiotic.
So this next one is something that I found online, and it was, I think, one of my absolute favorites. Along this similar vein, this one pro-choicer says, science agrees that life begins at conception, but that's not the same as sentience. Lettuce is alive. Trees are alive. My uterus is already alive. Life begins at conception because it has living cells. This should not be a deciding factor.
If you're not going to use that as a deciding factor, what are you going to use? And I'll bet you
I like how they go to lettuce.
I'll bet you this person cannot give you a definition of sentience.
Yeah.
Because if she did, then you'd know that people who are under general anesthesia aren't sentient.
Mm-hmm.
People who are unconscious aren't sentient.
Yeah.
You could even argue that people who are asleep aren't sentient.
Mm-hmm.
So do they not have a right to life? So if I want to sneak up on somebody that's asleep or under general anesthesia and kill them,
mm-hmm.
I didn't kill anybody that was sentient. So therefore, no harm, no foul, right?
A pro-choicer on Reddit commented, fetuses don't gain consciousness until at least the 24th week. Before then, it's more reasonable to treat it like an organ rather than an individual. We don't bat an eye at amputations, so neither should we at abortions.
So an abortion is an amputation, in other words.
That's what they're claiming.
You know, some of these things get so stupid, they're very difficult to respond to. But to suggest that an unborn child is analogous to
a kidney or a liver.
Or losing a finger.
Yeah.
Have a finger amputated.
Mm-hmm.
It's so mind-numbingly stupid.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to respond to.
Along the same vein of what defines humanity, there was a person from Created Equal who was on a college campus, and they encountered some pro-choicers, and this was one of the arguments that they heard. Take a listen.
What do you think this is actually right now, that picture? What
it's
is
like,
it really? Not what could it become, what is
it's
that?
It's kind of like an almost human.
Okay, what do you mean by almost human?
Well, it's growing. You know, it's getting there.
Okay, so it's a growing being?
Yeah, it's getting there.
Dead
it's not there
don't
yet.
Grow.
It's kind of is a caterpillar a butterfly?
An almost human.
An almost human.
I forgot that chapter in science where they talk about almost humans.
Almost humans. I must have been absent that day. But you know, it's like the argument about, and I've even heard some people who claim to be pro-life
mm-hmm.
say this. I heard somebody on Fox one time saying, even if you don't agree that the unborn is a human being,
mm-hmm.
you have to agree that they're at least a potential human being. How does something be a potential human being?
Something is either a human being or it's not. There is no potential.
If you're going to say it's a potential human being, then that means it has the potential of being something else,
mm-hmm.
like a parrot or
mm-hmm.
a spider.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever recall anywhere
mm-hmm.
evidence of women giving birth to parrots or spiders or anything else that's not human.
Mm-hmm.
How can a human woman be pregnant with something that's not human?
Yeah.
And that's what he's suggesting.
The thing that boggles my mind is they use the word fetus, which is simply a term to represent an unborn child in the womb that's past the embryonic stage
right.
and before birth.
Right.
And they use this to classify the inborn child as another species or as something else that is not a living human being.
Or that we don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
You know,
you can look at a picture and be like, I don't know what that is. That's
right.
crazy.
What is that? I don't.
What is that?
That's basically what this guy's saying. He said it's on its way.
Mm-hmm.
It's on its way to what? Yeah, if you people don't kill it, it's on its way to being born.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to that potential argument.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an unborn child has the potential
mm-hmm.
to be a Major League Baseball player or a school teacher or has the potential of being anything, but it doesn't have the potential of being something that's not human.
This next comment that I found on Reddit, I don't even know what they're trying to say, but they said, abortion is an example of human cultural and healthcare development. It should be legal.
That's a word salad.
What does that even mean?
That's just randomly picking words out of a dictionary. I'd like to ask this
person. Healthcare development?
What's your argument here?
So in that earlier MRC interview that I mentioned before, there was another pro-choicer that was interviewed, and they justify abortion by saying, our lives suck so much in today's society that abortion is, quote, the lesser of two evils.
Well, then why didn't he kill himself? I'm not calling on the guy to commit suicide, but I'm saying from his perspective,
yeah.
if he honestly believes that, what's he doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Why is he making this decision for a completely innocent, helpless baby who may not feel that way?
It's the warping of compassion, right? Because I find it the more compassionate thing to do than bring them up in a world
like
this.
Yeah, it's the bastardization of mm-hmm. compassion.
You see so often on the pro-choice side, them talking about, like, they have some sort of Ouija board or magic eight ball that will allow them to see the future of a child who's born to poor parents or a child who's born with a disability or go down the list, right? In their mind, abortion is always the most compassionate choice compared to anything else.
If one of these people was on a jury
mm-hmm.
and somebody was accused of killing their five-year-old
mm-hmm.
and saying he was not very bright, I didn't think he had much of a future,
mm-hmm.
this is a horrible place to live, the world is a bad place,
mm-hmm.
he might get killed in a school shooting anyway,
mm-hmm.
would they buy that argument and let this guy off the hook? And
no.
the scary thing
uh-uh.
to me is, I don't know, Sarah.
You don't think so?
I think the scary thing is there are people out there who probably would buy that argument.
I don't know.
That's how far our country has devolved.
This one's one of my favorite ones. So a tweet by a Carmine says that Roe helped in so many ways, and Planned Parenthood has prevented more abortions than the entire anti-choice movement combined. It's so sad that hate appears to have won out.
Well,
you hear that? Planned Parenthood has prevented more abortions than the entire pro-life movement.
You could say then, okay, if the Klan kills 5,000 black people this year, they prevented a lot of abortions, right? Because some of those black people would have been women who got pregnant and had abortions. Does that excuse them for what they did?
And anyone who thinks that Planned Parenthood prevents abortions
is a dreamer.
Is deluding themselves.
Right. Well,
these people make money off of abortion. If you think that they're interested in reducing the number of abortions, you're crazy.
Well, if you want proof of what you just said, think about this. A couple of years ago, they came out with this argument that abortion was only 3% of what Planned Parenthood did.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bald-faced lie at the time. But let's just say you buy it. Let's say you buy into that lie that abortion is just 3% of what they do. Then why is Planned Parenthood closing all these facilities in states that have outlawed abortion?
Mm-hmm.
You don't shut down because you lost 3% of your business.
No.
And you still got 97%.
Mm-hmm.
You don't shut down in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So why are they saying that we can't survive, we can't keep this Planned Parenthood open in this city if we can't kill babies?
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're lying.
Yeah.
The 3% number is a total fabrication. And what it's like is, let's say that you looked at all the sales that, let's say, General Motors makes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They sell cars, but they also sell parts. Let's say that for every car that General Motors sells, I don't know what the numbers are, but let's say that for every car that General Motors sells, they sell 97 parts in their parts departments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that could include little clips that are 20 cents a piece or spark plugs that are $2 or whatever.
New brake pads, yeah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Are we now going to say that selling new cars is only 3% of what General Motors does? You know, that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
If you look at Planned Parenthood's profit and loss statements or one of their 990s or whatever, to suggest that abortion is only 3% of what they do is preposterous.
Absolutely. So there was a tweet from a Riley Sampson who says, guns literally have more rights than a woman trying to get an abortion. It's a terrible time to be alive.
First off, guns don't have any rights. A gun is an inanimate object. It's a collection of metal and maybe some leather and some wood handles. A gun has no rights. It's the gun owner that has rights.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another human being.
Yeah. A pro-choicer on Reddit commented, it's simple. Abortion is as much of a personal freedom as owning guns, wearing masks, and it was during arguably the most enlightened time period of America when minorities finally started giving civil rights that abortion was ruled to be a personal right. It's only now, in the era of extreme political polarization and hatred, that abortion is questioned. It's just as much a personal right in America as the guns and no mask requirements those pro-lifers conveniently forget they support.
You know, by this argument, slavery should still be legal because it was a freedom that white people had at one point.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court had even ruled that that was the case
in
Dred Scott decision. So,
Getting tattoos is a personal freedom. Oh, wait, but you can only get tattoos once you're of legal age.
Right.
Drinking is a personal freedom. Oh, wait, only if you're of the legal age.
Yeah, you can't get a tattoo or drink when you're 12. This argument that this is a personal right.
Mm-hmm.
The killing of another human being is never a personal decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
That cannot be a personal decision.
And you know, I think the most interesting thing about this person's comment that they made, and they don't even understand the significance of it, is that when minorities started getting civil rights, that was when abortion was legalized. And they start to think that we today are more backwards than back then. It doesn't even occur to them that the rich elite in the country started proposing abortion at the moment that African Americans and Hispanics started getting civil rights.
That's what Jesse Jackson said back when he was pro-life, before he decided he wanted to be president and needed all that Democrat money.
Mm-hmm.
He was very pro-life, and he had said, it's very interesting that at the moment we said we would not sit on the back of the bus anymore, they started opening up a place for us at the abortion clinic.
I thought that was Alveda King.
Alveda King paraphrased that same thing, but Jesse Jackson said that back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the minute we started demanding our rights, they started calling for abortion.
And he wasn't the only one. If you look at Ebony Magazine and other magazines like that, you will see civil rights leaders and others in the African-American community talking about that very same point, that the moment we're getting rights, they're starting to talk about us controlling our population.
Well, there was a Dr. Greenlee. I can't remember what city.
Charles Greenlee?
Yeah, I can't remember what city he was in. Mm-hmm. But he was a doctor for Planned Parenthood, a black doctor. Mm-hmm. And they started opening up all these birth control clinics in black neighborhoods and abortion clinics in black neighborhoods. And he changed his mind on this and said, I won't work for him anymore. He said, I saw clearly what was going on. Mm-hmm. They were targeting us. And so, yes, it's not a coincidence that the call for abortion became at a fever pitch at the same time these people were demanding their constitutional rights. It was the natural extension of them demanding their constitutional rights.
Yeah.
President Johnson once said, was talking about ending poverty in the country. And he was talking about, people were saying, we need to have economic development in black communities. He said, for every dollar we spend on birth control and abortion in a black community, it's worth $5 in economic development. So which way do you think we went?
Yeah, it's disgusting. Speaking of disgusting arguments, here is one that a created equal person encountered on a college campus. Take a listen.
Humans are not all equal. Science is not morality, right? They are different.
Right.
So under the definition of 46 chromosomes equals human, then no, they're not equal because there's so many other factors that can get lowered or raised that contribute to moral worth.
Moral worth.
Moral worth.
How does this guy set himself up as the arbiter of what moral worth is?
And who do we give that authority and power to?
Right. Did Adolf Hitler have moral worth?
Or did the people that he appointed, were they entitled to figure out who had moral worth? That was their argument, right?
But see, these are the kind of rhetorical gymnastics you have to go to try to justify abortion. Mm-hmm. Because you can't justify it. They know they can't justify it. There's no way they can justify it.
Well, I find the irony in this is that the same people who make these arguments will also talk about fascism.
Right.
The moment you start talking about moral worth and value to society and taking human life as not being intrinsically valued, but what they bring to the table, you are supporting fascism.
Well, first off, you're a eugenicist. Mm-hmm. Moral worth could be the catchphrase for eugenics.
Yeah.
Because that's what they say. Some of these people are more morally worth living than other people are.
Yeah.
They had a catch-all phrase called shiftless. You could be declared morally invaluable if you were shiftless.
Yeah.
That's kind of a catch-all. You can catch everybody with that.
And what that led to is that, and a lot of people don't know about this, there were state sterilization boards.
Yeah.
That were sterilizing women because they believed they were bringing, quote, imbeciles into the world and the morally unfit.
Yeah, you had these eugenics boards all across America. And I didn't even realize how extensive it was until we were doing the research for MAFA 21. I think it's 33 states.
Something like that.
Had state eugenics boards. And the last one, you know, you think about this happening back in the 1800s or something. The last one didn't close until like 1984.
1984?
Something like that. I think it was 1984, and I think it was in Oregon, if I'm not mistaken. But you had state eugenics boards, and very often they were tied to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And, of course, forced sterilizations were a big part of that. And you had states passing laws. I know Mississippi passed a law that a judge could order a woman on welfare that if she had another baby and was going to be on welfare, the state could take the baby she already has born.
So they could take the children she already had away from her.
And they were even making it a condition of getting out of jail. If you were in prison and they were going to give you parole, you had to agree to be sterilized before you could get parole. So this was very widespread in the United States. One of the estimates I saw was that during the time that these state eugenics boards were doing forced sterilizations, not voluntary sterilizations, forced or coerced sterilizations, they did about 200,000 of them in the United States.
Wow.
And almost all of them, guess what, were black.
It's disgusting. By the way, before we move on to the next comment that I found, if you want to learn more about this or any of the racism behind the history of the legalization of abortion, you need to go watch our documentary, MAFA 21. We have it available for free to watch at MAFA21.com.
That's spelled MAFA, M-A-A-F-A 2-1.
Yes.
.com. It's a Swahili word. But people need to understand that language is very important here. And in some ways, we fall into the trap of using their language. And let me give you one of the best examples I can think of on this. Right now, you have states passing laws to protect the unborn. Mm-hmm. And some of them passing laws to allow abortion right up to the moment of birth. These laws are being referred to, even sometimes by pro-life people. They'll say, Texas, for example, has the most restrictive abortion laws in the country. That's the pro-abortion mindset, that they're restrictive. Mm-hmm. Our position ought to be that they're protective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the media, without exception, there won't be any exceptions to this within the American mainstream media. They refer to them as restrictive. Mm-hmm. If you had a story on abortion tonight on the CBS or ABC or NBC mm-hmm. Evening News about abortion bans in the country, that would be their language.
Yeah, and they refer to the pro-life movement as anti-abortion.
Right.
And, you know, I have no problem being referred to as anti-abortion because, yeah, I'm against abortion.
Right.
However, they don't call the pro-choice side pro-abortion.
Right.
No, theirs is pro-choice. But we can't be pro-life. We have to be anti-abortion.
Right. Well, I think this restrictive thing is the biggest deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because imagine how much the mindset would change of the American people if all of a sudden on CBS Evening News tonight they came out and said, breaking story in Texas, which has the most protective abortion laws in the country.
Well, I hear protective abortion laws, and I think a law is protecting abortion.
Oh, you could say they're protective of the unborn, whatever. But just the word protective
mm-hmm.
as applied to the unborn child rather than restrictive mm-hmm. as applied to abortion. The mindset of the American people, if they heard that every day rather than restrictive mm-hmm. every day, their mindset would change overnight. But we're not going to change them.
No.
The American media is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the abortion lobby, and we're not going to change that.
So there is another comment that kind of ties into all this. The pro-choicer says, why are you supporting the rights of the unborn? Why are you picking out the easiest group among all humans to support? The unborn can't speak for themselves. The unborn can't demand things from you. They don't want anything. You can't inflict on the unborn.
Nobody is doing what she just described more than the pro-aborts.
Yeah.
You've picked out the most defenseless, mm-hmm. least protected in the human species.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody more defenseless than the unborn baby. That's who your victim is.
This person says they don't want anything. Well, the most basic instinct is to want to live.
Right.
Are you really going to tell me that if you could speak to an unborn child, you'd be like, oh, I don't know if I want to live.
Yeah, go ahead and kill me.
Go ahead. I'm fine with that.
Here, rip this arm off.
Yeah.
But this is a good example of what I was saying earlier. Mm-hmm. God gifted us with stupid enemies. You have to be really stupid to make that statement right there.
Well, our final one that I thought we should end off with, which is an interesting argument. A pro-choicer on Reddit commented, I think the main goal of the pro-life movement is to get women back into either a kitchen or brothel, since the sexual pleasure and domestic housework is all she is viewed as providing to men.
Is that right?
So apparently this is our motivation, to get women back into either the kitchens or brothels.
Is that what your motivation is, Sarah?
You've caught me.
Right. The mind-numbing stupidity of these people. But it is a gift.
And this person has the bigotry, I want to call it, because I'm not even sure you can say that this is just misinformation or being naive, to believe that everyone in the pro-life movement is sexist men who are trying to keep women down. When you look at it, it's the opposite. There's actually far more women in the pro-life movement than are men. Yeah. And a lot of them have had abortions themselves. They know the pain and the agony that abortion comes with. So this is not just a bunch of people who are trying to keep women down. We believe that women deserve better and that this is not a quality.
Yeah. I tell you one of the great ironies of this whole battle.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I can't remember who did it. It might have been the Washington Post. Some newspaper did a survey on attitudes of people,
mm-hmm.
mainly attitudes of men
mm-hmm.
and women, separating them out, about family and children and so forth. Were they that much different? Do women want things that are drastically different than what men want?
Mm-hmm.
But what they found out was that what women wanted
mm-hmm.
was to marry somebody who they'd stay married to for the rest of their life,
mm-hmm.
who was a good provider,
mm-hmm.
who didn't drink, who didn't beat them up, who loved their children, took care of their children,
mm-hmm.
had a job. And what this article found out was that if you looked at the men who most closely resembled that design,
mm-hmm.
it was conservative pro-life men.
Shocking.
But these are the ones that these same people say, I don't want to have anything to do with them.
They're misogynistic and bigoted and all this kind of stuff.
But, but when they were asked what is it they want in a man, what they described was conservative pro-life men. It's amazing the stupidity of these people. Anyway, we're out of time.
We're out of time. We got to go back to doing other things to get women back into the kitchen or brothels.
I don't know how we're going to do it. You know, we don't seem to be making much headway. I've been married to the same woman to be 52 years in June, June 3rd.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have yet to be able to get her to go back to the brothel or back to the, you know, it's hard enough to get her to the kitchen sometimes.
Yeah, she wants to go out so she doesn't have to cook.
Right, exactly. But anyway.
Anyway.
Until next Thursday, remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
Uh-oh, we're here to win.
We're here to win because winning is how the killing stops. And we'll try to get Sarah to quit grinning and laughing by this time next week. We'll
I don't
see
know.
You then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.